There's a back road in the Heber Valley that doesn't get nearly enough credit. It's called Casperville Road. It winds through historic homesteads and mansions, past fields that have been worked for more than 100 years. And if you've ever driven it, really driven it, slowly, you may have noticed something that made you tap the brakes and squint out the window. Wagon wheels, old gas station signs, a cannon, Paul Bunyan's tricycle, and a Bigfoot trap. No, I'm not making any of this up. And I was determined to learn more about it. So on a gusty morning, I head out to meet the man behind what might be one of the Heber Valley's best kept secrets. What locals call the Casperville Road Museum.
I think we can learn a lot from history. When things are gone and people die, it's just like a library burning down, because that's gone unless it's been recorded and written about or whatever.
John Bessendorfer is 89 years old. He's lived his entire life on the same piece of land his grandparents homesteaded in 1889. And for the last 50 years, he has been quietly, stubbornly, and joyfully making sure the valley's history is preserved. John regularly gives tours of what has become a living archive of the Heber Valley's roots. Tours are by appointment only. No website, no online booking. Just give him a call at 435-654-1459. What he has built on his 20-acre property is impressive. 20 buildings, thousands of artifacts, farming equipment, pioneer homes, vintage cars, military relics, and even a schoolhouse. This is not a casual hobby. This is a life's calling.
I gotta always have my cane.
Yeah. I mean, for 89 years old, you're getting around pretty good. You have a better memory than I do. Oh.
John greets me at the door of his house with a cane and introduces me to it right away.
This is my constant companion.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. It has a name.
Oh, what's your cane's name?
Rascal Beater. Rascal Beater. And so that's what moves me along. I got it in low gear.
He may be physically in low gear, but his memory is still firing on all cylinders. John knows the name and story behind every artifact. During our tour, it's clear there are far more stories than we have time to hear. To understand this place, you have to go back to the beginning. His grandparents, the Caspers, arrived here in 1889. They drove their livestock up a dirt road through Parley's Canyon. When they arrived, there wasn't anything waiting for them.
And they settled on the ground that I live on now. There was no home, like I mentioned, so they lived among the sagebrush. Took them 2 days to get here, of course, with all of their livestock. And so they had a tent, lived under the wagon box, and built the home that's next door here.
After they built that two-bedroom house, they built a barn, dug irrigation ditches, pulled sagebrush, raised pigs, chickens, horses, and dairy cows. They didn't just survive here, they became here. And so did John. He was born on this farm. He grew up in that house, the white one you can still see on the property today, with no running water, no indoor bathroom, no furnace. His father dug an open well, 3 feet wide, where you'd tie a bucket to a rope and haul up your water by hand. 11 people lived in that house: John, his parents, 5 siblings, a grandfather who lived to 95, an unmarried aunt who was like a second mother, a disabled uncle, and a baby cousin his parents took in after her mother died young.
So obviously family was the center of your life. What did that feel like to have such close bonds with extended family and as a child, just growing up in that kind of a circle?
Well, at that time, that was the only thing I knew of, and I loved it, had no problems. And there was a great connection between all of us. We loved each other.
John later married his sweetheart, Jane, taught elementary school for 33 years, all subjects, self-contained classrooms, in Midway and Heber. He estimates he taught 1,000 students over his career, and he knew every single person in the valley, which at the time was around 3,000 people. He was an Eagle Scout and a longtime scoutmaster, taking boys to camp in the adjacent Provo River bottoms, the same meadows and banks where he'd fished and hunted and explored as a child. He and Jane raised 7 children, and they were married 52 years before she passed away almost a decade ago. As John leads me around the museum, her presence is everywhere, in the loom room, in the fainting couch. In the Pioneer home, they spent an entire summer moving 3 miles down the road on railroad jacks and a semi-trailer, just the two of them and their son. The 20 buildings on the property aren't big, fancy, climate-controlled museum buildings. They're living buildings, packed floor to ceiling, wall to wall, with the honest stuff of real lives. And there are also some fun surprises along the way.
Okay, come this way. Like I said, you may end up in jail. You think I'm kidding?
No, I'm actually going to jail here.
Before we go in here, though, you see, you have to look up here.
Saloon closed for hangings. Okay, taking me to a secret room in the jail. What could go wrong?
Come through here.
A creaky door in the jail cell swings open to reveal a hidden room full of old cars, including a 1950 Ford that belonged to a man who ran a garage on Main Street in Heber. Then there's the Texaco Station building, filled with vintage signs, a Pepsi logo, and a Sinclair dyno. Some of the items were originally found scattered in the sagebrush and later ended up in an auction where John placed a $20 bid on a lot he hadn't even seen. Next, we explore a fully stocked schoolhouse with old desks and a chalkboard. Inside, 70 posters show Wasatch High School graduating classes. Some hung on the walls, others stacked where there's no more room. Everything was assembled by John.
All one winter, when it was snowing outside and I couldn't get out. But I had to have the yearbooks, and I'd cut them up and then put their pictures on these.
Oh, my gosh.
Each of the classes.
I find his class, 1955, and spot him immediately.
Okay, let's see where you are.
You will.
Oh, look at that handsome devil.
Look at that haircut.
Look at that haircut. What was that haircut called?
Butch. A butch. That's what they called him. Flat top.
And then there's the Bigfoot trap, not far from the entrance to the road.
A lot of people say, oh, is that a bear trap? I said, no, it's a Bigfoot trap. I'm trying to catch Bigfoot.
So you actually have a trap for Bigfoot. How successful has the trap been, John?
Well, I've had to just settle to use it for catching mice.
And here's the joyful thing about John Bessendorfer. Underneath all the humor and the sheer joyful quirkiness of this place, there is something profound happening on Casperville Road. Something intentional. Something urgent, even. John is the last living person out of 50 cousins on his mother's side. Every one of them and their spouses gone. Nearly 100 people.
And I don't know why I'm still alive. I'm the last one.
Does that instill in you to keep preserving this? I mean, you said this is sacred ground, really. I can see the emotion as you're talking about why you'd never leave. So what is it? Is it the roots that you love here, just growing up, all the memories? Why is this sacred ground for you?
Because of growing up here and my whole life. And also working on it, you know, working in the fields and the land we had, raising the animals. That was my whole life, basically. And then all the memories of it, you know, all the things over the years, and just so many experiences. If I put a number on them, it'd probably be in the hundreds of thousands.
He's captured some of those memories in a few books, illustrated with cartoon-style watercolor drawings that bring the stories to life. One item, though, never goes on public display. It lives in his house, too personal and too fragile to display. It's his great-grandfather's Mormon battalion uniform, sword, and cane. His most treasured item, passed down 5 generations through the Mexican War and the Black Hawk War, all the way to this man on this land, at a little roadside museum, where I ask him how it all came together.
This is really an impressive collection. On a teacher's salary, how were you able to just keep collecting all of these?
It just came naturally. Do you know what manna is?
Yeah.
What is manna?
Manna from the Old Testament is what God fed the Israelites as they were wandering for their 40 years.
That's what I sometimes say. It was manna from heaven. Because I look back on it, I don't really know where it all came from. It's just like it came out of heaven, and it's here. And so I don't know how and why, but it's here. And there's no way I could ever replace it, because I don't know where I'd go to get anything like what's in here.
At the end of our tour, I ask him how long he hopes the collection will live on.
I hope for 100 years more.
This is Amber Johnson for the Community Campfire.